Welcome back to the Audio Academy podcast. I'm your host, Georgie Jameson, and as it's Eurovision week and the competition turns 70 this year, our guest is the UK head of delegation, Andrew Cartmell. Last year at the festival, we held a session on Eurovision at 70, and we were joined by last year's entry, Remember Monday, who exclusively sang their new single for us. Andrew is part of the team who chooses the UK entry, so I asked him what's involved in his role as head of delegation.
Yeah, head of delegation is a very grand title, isn't it? It's a title which each of the countries taking part in Eurovision, they have a delegation who goes this year to Vienna in Austria. They just need someone, I guess, in charge of the delegation and all the various things that involves. So I work for BBC Studios. BBC Studios are the production company that produce the UK's Eurovision coverage. So that includes both what we see and hear on television, but also the selection of the artist, the song, and then how the performance is staged. But yeah, to your question, I am one of the people who make the decision, but not the only one.
So I'm a big Eurovision fan. I love it. I go to a party every year. We eat and drink and score it. And yeah, I love it. And I've loved it since. Well, I'm going to give my age away here, but my era was Bucks Fizz.
Yeah. Likewise, that first and foremost, I'm a huge fan. I love it every year. It's an absolute privilege to have this job. I know that it's a massive privilege. I've been watching it since a kid, like you. I remember the sort of glory years of the 80s and remember watching it as a student in the 90s. And the first time I went to Eurovision was actually in 2002. I went as a journalist for the BBC. I had media accreditation, press accreditation. So I've seen it from both that side of things, as well as being part of the accreditation. Head of delegation, I've done a few times. The first time I was head of delegation was 2012 and 2013, but I wasn't involved those years in anything to do with the selection of the artist. That was the years of Engelbert and Bonnie Tyler when the UK went a bit retro. It was Radio 2 who selected the artists, and I came on board in sort of February, March time to lead the delegation at Eurovision. So wasn't involved in those selections. In terms of the number of times I have really been involved, since I've been head of delegation, it's really been just three times. The first time was in 2022, which was obviously the year we had great success in the UK. That was Sam Ryder. So myself and my colleague Lee Smithhurst, we were the team at the BBC at BBC Studios, who were working on finding the artist in conjunction with Tap Music, who were involved for a couple of years. And we worked with them very closely on the shortlisting of the artists and then, you know, making it all happen once we'd selected Sam Ryder. Basically, last year, Remember Monday, I was very much involved in that. And again, this year, Look Mum No Computer. How it works is myself and the last couple of years, this year and last year, a guy called David May. David May was Sam Ryder's manager and he works in the music industry, fingers in many pies. David and I first got to know each other in Turin with Sam Ryder, worked together really well. And I thought it was important that when we're looking for the UK artist, we have somebody working with us who knows the industry inside out, has lots of contacts. So for last year and this year, David and I, we start work on the project in the summer, sort of July, August time. We reach out to artists, managers, labels. You get lots of interest. You get some who don't reply, but you equally get a lot of people who are sort of like, yeah, and potentially maybe. So, you know, then it's your job to chat to them, meet them, go to the gigs of the artists. Sometimes they're well up for it from the start. Sometimes you have to cajole them, persuade them, sell Eurovision, explain all the pros, the huge exposure that, you know, it brings to artists, all the potential. We ask interested artists to send us demos of songs. And some artists, they just want to send us their songs they've written. That's completely fine. In other cases, we also put on songwriting sessions. We invite writers from both the UK and from across Europe who work with artists who want to come to the songwriting sessions. And at the end of that process, like this year, for example, we got to a stage where we had about 9 or 10 songs from 9 or 10 different artists, some of which came from the songwriting sessions, some of which just came from them. And at that point, we wanted to see those artists perform them. So we had a studio in Manchester. Essentially, I hate to use the word audition, but it's a form of audition. We see them, we hear them, we hear the live vocals, we see them on camera performing that song. And that enabled us then to shortlist down further. And we added an additional process this year. We just wanted to get a sense of how those songs were received by some people across Europe. Not the film performances, but we sent the audio demos of those of the shortlisted tracks at that point to a selection of people across Europe, the sort of people who might be on juries at Eurovision, Ukrainian rock singers, Norwegian songwriters, and these are real people. We went to about 50 potential jurors around Europe, but also members of the fan community in Lithuania and Poland and Finland and Belgium, Austria. And we asked all these people just to give us their immediate thoughts on the song demos. Everyone signed an NDA. Nobody broke it. Nothing appeared online. It was a miracle. I was pleased. I think people enjoyed the process and felt it was a privilege to be part of it. But we just wanted to get a sense of what people's thoughts were. And, you know, we asked them to rank them as well. But, you know, we weren't just like choosing the song that was the top of the rankings. And so when we got everything together, we had various things to think about. We'd obviously had seen the privilege of seeing the artists perform on camera and heard them sing live. So we knew what that was like. We had a sense of what some people across Europe, both Eurovision fans and professional juror types, thought of the songs. And then we also had to think about the act. You know, what sort of person were they? What could they bring to Eurovision? What sort of personality, what sort of story they had? So it was a combination of factors. And then we really did shortlist down. By the time we got to sort of December, January, we were down to like three artists, and we selected Look Mom No Computer this year with Eins Zwei Drei by late January. That's the process, how it works. Oh, it has worked this year.
That's fascinating to hear the process, because I remember the days of Song for Europe. There would be, I don't know, about eight or 10 different songs and artists, or one artist singing all those songs. I remember Michael Ball, I think they decided it was going to be Michael Ball, but he sung eight different songs, and Terry Wogan used to do it, and public would vote. Like, I mean, you can't always trust us to pick the right thing.
Well, people say that, but I always think, to be fair, it's down on us which songs we put in front of the public. I would like us to return personally. I mean, it's not my decision. It's, you know, I work for BBC Studios, the production side of BBC. It is very much down to the decision of public service, BBC commissioning, how they want it to be each year. I do think at some point it would be great to return to a national selection. I would say that if we were to do that, it would need to be a damn good show. There's some incredible national selection shows out there now. Finland, Sweden, some of them like Italy, San Remo, actually predates Eurovision, I think. I think Eurovision was based on San Remo, but you know, the Swedish show a lot of people know about. But, you know, countries like Finland are doing incredible shows in arenas now. If you're going to do a selection show, you want it to have those production values, and you want to put those artists through that sort of environment. I would like us to return to it at some point. I would also like us clearly to have some good results, and I think that would help inform the British public potentially what makes a good Eurovision artist and song. I think Sam Ryder clearly changed everything for us in 2022. People appreciated Eurovision is not just novelty and fun, as a lot of British people think it was. So I think if we can get some more good results on the table like that, that would be the perfect time to have a national selection show. And I think the British audience would hopefully take that responsibility seriously, as long as we put good artists and songs in front of them.
Eurovision is a TV spectacular, but it's also a very big radio show as well. I mean, it's three shows now. We've got the two semi-finals and the final. They're listened to on radio. So how much do you have to consider when you're picking an entry that this is a good radio song that's going to work without those visuals? Because some people will be listening and vote just by listening to the radio. And also, you want this to be a song that works for music radio across all of Europe so that people connect with it.
Do you know what? It's a really, really good question, Georgie, because often you will hear people say, a song's not very good. It's just radio friendly, which sounds incredible as a criticism. And I understand where they're coming from. The argument is sometimes that a song just sits on one level, doesn't have big enough moments, and just feels like a song you might just hear on the radio. You know, you've heard it a few times. It really gets inside your brain and you're like, you're humming it along, and it feels like a great song for radio. And there's people who think that actually some really successful Eurovision songs are more than that, and you need to have big moments. A good example, that if you think about Liverpool 2023, when Loreen Tatu won and Carrier from Finland Cha-Cha-Cha came second. Cha-Cha-Cha is probably not the sort of song you would hear being played regularly on playlisting on radio. And yet it was hugely popular from the moment it was launched. Massive fan favourite in Liverpool, and from memory had the biggest televote in Liverpool 2023. Was really successful, but you wouldn't really call that a radio-friendly song. And actually do really well at Eurovision without being radio friendly. However, Loreen Tatu probably ticked both boxes, did have drama, did have incredible moments for staging and spectacle, but certainly after Eurovision, when it won, it was played on the radio. It was played on the radio in the UK. I want to say it sort of matters, but equally, I think sometimes there can be songs which can do really well at Eurovision, which maybe don't have that instant radio appeal. In fact, this year's really interesting in the UK. Look, Mum, No Computer, Eins, Zwei, Drei. In many respects, it's not your obvious radio record. You know, May Muller definitely was a great pop song for radio. Remember Monday last year was played on Capital, was played on Radio 2. May Muller was also on commercial and local, on BBC Radio.
Sam Ryder had, I mean, that's a great radio record.
Exactly. I think this year we've deliberately taken a different tack. We've gone for a song and an act, which maybe, if we're honest, is not as radio friendly, but actually what it does have, hopefully, is big appeal on the night in the arena. It's a real, potentially a big sing-along song in the arena. It's got big moments that we can put into staging. So I suppose what I want to say is, absolutely amazing if you can get a song played regularly on radio. It's a real bonus, as particularly if you can get it played beforehand. And Look, Mum, Your Computer has just gone onto Radio 2's playlist. But I don't think it's everything. I think you can have great success at the contest without a song that isn't necessarily automatically radio friendly, if that makes sense. But of course, if you do well at the contest, I suspect stations would come on board because it's been seen and heard by millions. If you're in the top three, top five, that you would get that radio airplay. I'm a bit torn really, because there's different ways of looking at it, I think.
Because we talked about this at festival last September, and our theme was World of Sound. We had a whole session about Eurovision at 70 and its relevance today. And Remember Monday were there, and Will Wilkin. What kind of influence do you think Eurovision has on music radio here and across Europe and then the wider world? Because I don't hear any other countries' entries on our UK pop stations leading up to the event. But do European stations play them and play ours? Because there's this perception, oh, it's bigger in Europe. They take it more seriously than we do.
I think it's a mix, to be fair. There are countries, certainly, which are playing Eurovision songs, not just their own countries, but other countries, for weeks, months, maybe leading up to the contest. Scandinavia in particular has huge love of Eurovision. And I know that a lot of songs from other countries get playlisted on some of the major radio networks in Scandinavian countries. As for the UK, you're right. You know, the UK song is often played, but although this year, Delta Goodrum from Australia, I know, has had some plays on Radio 2.
She's a name, isn't she? She's a name we know from the chart.
Exactly. Yeah, and it has relied upon some of our own commentators and hosts. So Rylan has a regular radio show. Rylan would often play other countries' songs on his radio show on Radio 2. Other countries, some of them do have more playlisting of other songs. But what I think is interesting is maybe after the contest, that's, to me, potentially the impact of Eurovision. You know, we mentioned Loreen when Loreen won in Liverpool was playlisted across UK radio. Måneskin from Italy, when they won, they also, in fact, not just their Eurovision song, but their follow-up tracks were playlisted on BBC commercial radio. I've been in Portugal a little bit over the last couple of years. There, I've heard Eurovision songs played on the radio regularly. There was a song you may remember, Rosalyn, Snap. It didn't perform that well in the contest, came about 20th from memory. But the combination of it getting successful on TikTok, the social media, and then into the radio world, I would hear Snap Rosalyn played on Portuguese radio over and over again. Eurovision definitely has impact on playlisting on radio across Europe before in some countries, but certainly after with the most successful acts and songs. More now than I think at any point in probably the 80s, actually. I think, you know, you and I talked about the 80s being this, and probably even before, I wasn't born then, but the 60s, the 70s, there were clearly artists who were having great success and being played across radio and in the early 80s. But I think that sort of died away. But I do think the last 5, 6, 7 years, certainly Eurovision's having much more impact now on social media and on radio playlisting.
Let's talk a bit about your role as executive producer then for the contest and also as senior executive producer when we hosted for Ukraine in 2023 in Liverpool.
In a typical year, which was not Liverpool, in a typical year, we have this role as head of delegation, looking after the artist and the song and everyone out in the country. But as executive producer for BBC Studios, you're also responsible for the television broadcast coverage. I oversee the team with the commentators, with Graham Norton. This year we have Rylan, Angela Scanlon doing it, and everything that involves from contingencies you might have to scripting and on all those sort of things. For radio, that is a separate part of the production. So BBC Radio 2 have their own production team who are in the next door commentary box. We work really closely together, and increasingly, only this morning we had a meeting with Radio 2. We're working much more closer now than we were a few years ago. Radio 2 gives huge coverage of Eurovision. We sit next door to each other in the commentary boxes, knocking on the window, sharing information, information, sharing social media content. So it is a joined up operation now, more than it ever was. In Liverpool, when I was executive producer of the three live shows from Liverpool, when we were hosting on behalf of Ukraine, that, to be honest, was much more just what you're seeing on television, essentially responsible for the live shows. But of course, they were broadcast on Radio 2 in the UK and across radio stations all across Europe. But I guess my main focus was what was happening on that stage.
After 70 years, is Eurovision still relevant as a reflection of music that we listen to on the radio? If it is, how does it stay relevant? And if it isn't, what needs to change?
I think it's become more relevant in the last 5, 6, 7 years. Eurovision has done a very good job of appealing to sort of younger audiences. The thing everyone's always after, it's big live event status. There are not many big events that bring people together in the way that Eurovision does. And alongside social media in particular, which has got its pros and cons, it's really engaged audiences. Audiences are now interested in Eurovision months ahead when countries are selecting their artists. It becomes almost a year-round phenomenon now. It's there for people the whole time. And I think it has become increasingly relevant. You know, as we mentioned, people like Måneskin with songs like Rosalind Snap. Songs are breaking through in the way that they perhaps were in the 70s and 80s, but then didn't for maybe a few decades. How it can be stay relevant, I think a big responsibility of the broadcasters to ensure we get relevant songs for viewers and listeners. On a personal note, I would really like the UK to experiment more in next few years. So obviously, Look Mum No Computer this year. One of the reasons we went for him, people described him, the song and him, as authentically British. It got a bit of heritage in there, the whole electronic synth sound, which is authentically British. You know, we had all those artists back in the day in the 80s, Depeche Modes, Pet Shop Boys through the 90s. There's definitely influences there. And I think it's really important that the BBC and other broadcasters are experimenting with different music sounds. I would love us to have a rock act at Eurovision. I would love us maybe to have a rap track, or maybe it's some influenced by like Gaelic, Scottish, or, you know, the last couple of years, we've been having conversations with Welsh language artists. We did speak to a Gaelic artist from Scotland. We've had rock act in the running 2 years ago. I think that's the way to try and ensure Eurovision stays relevant and we don't just slip into middle of the road, if that makes sense.
Because it's always had that very poppy, dare I say cheesy, reputation, hasn't it? You send a pop song. I mean, they have to be 3 minutes long, so it's the classic three-minute pop song. But then suddenly, you know, you get these amazing artists who, Lordi, wasn't it, from Finland, you know, suddenly there's this thrash metal song that wins Eurovision. Everyone goes, what was that about?
When Måneskin's rock sound was like breath of fresh air for Eurovision. But then so was someone like Mahmood from Italy in 2019. That was a really, really great song. And actually, I don't mean to bring down pop. I mean, I love pop, don't get me wrong. You know, it could as easily be a great pop song next year for the UK. But I want us to ensure we're looking at artists and genres from outside that, you know, world. We've got, you know, indie bands. That's a big part of the British music scene. You know, we were talking to a sort of ska punk band this year. Those are the sort of acts and artists I would love us to continue talking to. And I think, you know, with Look Mum No Computer, we've got something authentically British. It's distinctive. I think it will stand out on that stage. It's a song which people seem to either really love or it's not for them. And I'm totally fine with that because I think it's better to stand out than to sit somewhere in the middle where a lot of people go, yeah, I quite like that British song, but quite like is never going to get us any points. So you have to sort of take some risks, if you like. And whatever our result will be this year, Sam Look Mum No Computer has been an absolute joy to work with. He is the heart of that song. He turned up at a songwriting session with his synthesizer out of the back of a van, took it into a room with some writers and led that session and said, if I'm going to write with you, we need to create this song on the synthesizer. And that's exactly what he did. And we'll see how it does. But I think that's the way to go for the UK for the future. And that, I think, is what will keep Eurovision relevant for the next 30 years to get it to 100 years. Shout out to a country like Latvia. Latvia is a small country. The last few years, Latvia has done some really interesting things musically. Like last year, it had this group of six women, almost like folk sound, but a really cool folk sound. And Latvia are not prepared to take musical risk. And I really like that. And Finland as well, you know, varies. Some years it's a bit more novelty out there, but they also do rock artists. You know, this year, their favorites in the betting. They've got a really interesting combination with a lady playing a violin with a great vocalist. That's the sort of things I would like the UK to be doing more of in the future.
dare to be brave. Yeah. Can we win it this year? And can we ever win it ever again?
Oh, I'm of a view we can absolutely win it again. We didn't come second for no reason in 2022. I don't buy the argument that the UK hasn't done well because it's all about politics. I think, if I'm brutally honest, we've often got some of the components right. You know, we've obviously had some great vocalists. Sometimes we've had some really interesting and clever staging, but you have to get the artist, the song and the staging all together. And we did get that with Sam Ryder. And I think that's what we've got to keep aiming to do. Who knows? You know, the betting often gets things right, but sometimes acts come through. You just don't know what's going to happen. But can the UK win? 100%.
A big thank you to Andrew Cartmell for being our guest. Good luck to our UK entry, Look Mum, No Computer. You can hear the second semi-final on Thursday and the final on Saturday night on BBC Radio 2. The final on the radio is presented by Rylan, who is our host this year for the Arias on the 21st of May. Arias tickets are available through our website for the big night at the Roundhouse. Go to audioacademy.org.uk. Don't forget, if you're an Audio Academy member, then you can get a discount on passes for the podcast show in London next Wednesday the 20th and Thursday the 21st of May. And we're also offering a members discount for South by Southwest, a festival of business, technology and creativity in London from the 1st to the 6th of June. Go to audioacademy.org.uk/members offers. And next week on the podcast, our guest is Adem Holness, Head of Music for South by Southwest Festival. I'll see you next week.